You are listening to Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast, episode 17 for Tuesday, April 12th, 2022. This is JJ Sefton. I'm joined by CBD and Misanthropic Humanitarian. Gentlemen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Well, it seems to be we had a whole script and roster of wonderful items to talk about today, but that got preempted by what seems to be a terrorist attack in my hometown of Brooklyn, New York, where a gunman decided to throw a smoke grenade and then start opening fire and shoot about six people. I don't think there's any reports of deaths, but supposedly the police have recovered some unexploded devices, and the perpetrator is still on the loose. He's described as... he was described as black, but I think that was omitted now for obvious reasons. 5 foot 5 inches and 180 pounds. I would say Barbara Mikulski, but I think she has an alibi.
What about Jerome Nadler?
Could be Jerry Nadler, but...
yeah, he must have lost a lot of weight, though.
It was his pastrami that was on the loose. But this is really... I would say it's insanity, but, you know, what do you expect when... crime is decriminalized. The crazies are on the streets. We're letting in people through the southern border, like there is no southern border, and that's going to go off the charts as of the end of May when Title 42 expires. But you know, this is just madness.
Well, I'm not 100% sure that this is a result of our open borders. It's very possibly the racism that's being stoked in Black America by the usual suspects. And again, we should remember the 24-hour rule, really the 48-hour rule, although we don't know what the hell happened. You know, for all we know, it's an FBI plot. And doesn't that sound ridiculous? And 15 years ago, I would have laughed. I would have laughed at you. But now, if you told me that this was an FBI plot to change the direction of the news cycle, I would have said, maybe, okay.
No, not anymore, CBD. I mean, after the revelations that came out in Michigan with the Whitmer plot, that's come out on the January 6th, opened the doors for the protesters, thinking that this is an FBI or any other alphabet soup agency type of plot is no longer tinfoil hat thinking. But I agree with you. We should probably wait 24 to 48 hours to see what's going up. I suspect before we're done with this podcast, there'll be cries for gun control, ghost gun control, smoke bomb device control, and everything else. And wait and see. And I'm going to violate the 24 or 48 hour rule. That when they catch this son of a bitch, he'll have the record a mile long. And, you know, you can have all the gun controls and stuff you want, but if you're not going to punish criminals, they're just going to come back and repeat. And that's all I have to say about that. Hopefully there's no deaths in New York.
Yeah, supposedly at this point, it's, no deaths reported. Six people have been shot and they're being treated. CBD mentions the racism angle of, which of course, according to critical race theory, black people cannot be racist because they're perpetually victims. But setting that aside for the moment, the incident took place in an area of the city which is Sunset Park, or the neighborhood in Brooklyn, and that is a very big Chinese community right there. So not to cast aspersions or jump to conclusions, but look, in this day and age where you have Chinese people being assaulted left, right, and center, as well as Jews and white people in general, by persons of color, shall we say, This is, and it's being stoked by the usual suspects. This is, sadly, to be expected.
And at the risk of banging the same drum over and over again, this goes back to the Great Society. You know, Black America was well on its way to being a integral part of the melting pot and having a solid middle class. And LBJ, in his infinite wisdom, decided that he would rather destroy Black America for their votes than actually do his job as a politician and do what is best for America. I'm not sure that it's racism as much as hatred of all others in Black America that is causing much of this. They look at the news, they see that they are being left behind, and it's unfortunate because they are being left behind by the very people who claim to be their saviors, the Democrat Party.
It's a microcosm in a way of of leftist politics is to create a problem and then to create a bureaucracy that supposedly is there to solve the problem but only exacerbates the problem and just grows the bureaucracy. And again, going back to the critical race theory nonsense, and it's actual poison, really, it is instilling in people a sense that they will never be anything more than victims, which is kind of ironic because they're running the table here and burning cities to the ground over, you know, for grievances. And anybody who protests it is actually the ones who are beaten up and abused and persecuted. But it's just, it's insidious. It's to constantly brainwash people into thinking generation after generation that you'll never get ahead, that everything is stacked against you. And the only solution is either to turn society on its head or to create grievance and constant grievance. And people say, well, when will it end? When will it, when will we have achieved this so-called social justice or racial justice or whatever you want to call it? And I think it's never going to end.
That's exactly right. It will never end because the Democrat Party and the progressive movement in the United States will always need votes. And if by some miracle Black America emerges from the malaise created by the Democrat Party and casts off their chains and becomes what they absolutely can be, which is part of the middle class of America, the Democrats will find other victims. Will that be Hispanic Americans? Will that be Asian Americans? Will it be some class that I could only guess at? Absolutely. It will happen. That is why the idea of the Democrat Party as anti-American has to be part of the mainstream thought in the conservative establishment. And hopefully the Republican Party.
What's ironic, though, is what you're seeing. If you can believe polls, there is a massive disaffection. I'm not going to say they're going to switch parties, but there is massive disaffection between the core voting blocks of the Democrat Party, Blacks and Hispanics. And they are really freaking out, not only just economically of what the Biden junta is doing to them in terms of their ability to eke out an existence, but it's also the crucial issue, which came out of left field, is this whole transsexual, transgenderism rush to sexualize our children. And that is not going down well, not only with normal people who are finally awakened to what's going on, thank you Walt Disney Company, but traditional Democrat constituent groups who are not on board with homosexuality with these kind of things. And they do, for lack of perhaps any other commonality that we might have with them, because of the divisions that we talked about, religion to a certain extent and proper family or male-female relationships is something that crosses a line in Black culture and Latino culture. So this is a major issue that is going to bite them in the ass, I think, pretty badly, or has the potential to.
Yeah, I've read those polls too, where the Hispanic numbers are really starting to fluctuate from the Democrats over to the Republicans. It's just a matter of going out there and speaking to them. You know, the Republicans can be like the Democrats at times, and that's like, well, we'll hit up, you know, the Blacks, the Browns, the Yellows. We'll hit them up every 2 to 4 years when it's the election cycle. But no, I mean, this should be a resounding statement day in and day out. Look what these people, the Democrats, have done to you. Have you gotten further ahead with 8% inflation in 12 months? What's it cost you to drive to the gas station? Why are these teachers and educators telling your children not to tell your parents what the hell's going on in the classroom? And it's a culture war. And it's not just who's going to control the White House or the House or the Senate. It's, you know, it's a fight right now for the soul and heart of America. And if we're not out there courting people to vote with us and to work with us, then it's a lost cause.
That's exactly it. Both of you have nailed it. The catastrophic miscalculation on the part of the Democrat Party is a fantastic opening for the Republican Party. What they have done is taken two hot buttons, inflation, which hurts everybody because Blacks and Hispanics buy gas too, and they buy groceries too. And cultural changes beyond the pale. As JJ said, teaching kids about transgenderism and all that kind of crap is guaranteed to put off people who would not normally be put off by the many other Democrat talking points. It's a fantastic opportunity for the Republican Party. How they're going to screw it up, I'm not 100% sure, but I am confident that they will.
Look, I'm no lover of, of course not. He's one of the most horrible human beings on the planet, Al Sharpton. But even he the other day was saying, sounding the alarm bells on this, telling the Democrats, man, you guys got to cool it with this transgender stuff. But I think it's too late. I mean, that cat is out of the bag, and you have this intersectional group colliding with the other intersectional group, and it's not sitting well with normal America.
Yeah. Well said.
Well,
there you go. On that wonderful note, we'll take a little bit of a break and we'll be back in just a second. Hang tough, everybody. And we are back from a short break. J.J. Sefton, Misanthropic Humanitarian, CBD, Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast, episode 17. Well, lo and behold, look what happens. The wonderful folks at the FBI who are guarding our freedoms from horrible insurrectionists and white supremacists and their case against these goofy guys who supposedly plotted to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer has completely fallen apart, which we sort of suspected from the beginning that it was just one of these entrapment cases. But it's just amazing. Just really, the FBI needs to be completely dismantled. It's horrendous.
Would you, JJ, or you, CBD, if you were to sit on a federal jury and there was testimony from an FBI agent, would you believe that son of a bitch? I sure as hell wouldn't. And I mean, you hear Sean Hannity and Dan Bongino. Oh, it's just the people at the top. No, it's rubbish from top to bottom. It's fish guts every which way you look there. They can all go to hell.
Yeah, you know, the 99% give the 1% a bad name. I agree. It's
no, there's more.
No. I mean, that...
I'm thinking it's more like 100% is bad. Maybe even 101% is bad. And nobody's good?
Yeah. The fact is that the FBI in Michigan went, I mean, top to bottom, every single person involved in that case was acting in a criminal way. It was a conspiracy to create a conspiracy for its newsworthiness. I can't think of any other reason to do it.
You can make a devil's advocate argument, and people do this argument who always sort of support these so-called, you know, these sting operations or entrapment operations, to say, well, if people were innocent, they wouldn't have taken the bait in the first place. And they're going, well, this is ridiculous, because the guys who they caught were just shooting their mouths off, like three or four guys at a bar going, yeah, I'd like to shoot this guy in the head, or I'd like to do that. And it was just all bluster and nothing more than that. And they just literally used that to ruin their lives, because they didn't like what, and rightly so, they were opposed to what Gretchen Whitmer was doing. Were they really going to kidnap her? No. It was like, you know what? If I really had the guts, I'd kidnap Gretchen Whitmer. And it's like that's not, there it is. That's proof that they're plotting to kidnap the governor. It's the most ridiculous thing in the world. And the FBI is notorious for doing this for years and years and years. And they railroad people left, right, and center. And worse than that, I mean, it was Robert Mueller, the man beyond reproach, who I believe was in bed with Whitey Bulger up in Boston,
and looked away when Whitey Bulger killed people.
Exactly, just because he was a so-called informant. Yeah. Well, what was he informing him on? And it turns out the assistant director, I forgot his name, up in the Boston office was thick as thieves with Whitey Bulger and was an actual criminal. It wasn't like Whitey Bulger was an informant for him. He was participating in the crime. So, I mean, this is just an absolute, it's beyond abuse of power. I think it was Julie Kelly who she's been a stalwart on this story, along with the January 6th, the political prisoners. They're basically a political hit squad for the deep state. That's all it is, period. And anybody.
And the scary thing is that give me the man and I'll give you the crime.
Yeah, Levrent.
It's Beria. It's exactly what's going on. And it's scary because, you know, you look at Ace of Spades and you go through the comments in one of the more contentious threads, and you'll discover people who tongue-in-cheek suggest that we need to start building gallows on Constitution Avenue. Well, you know, the FBI could look at that and say, well, this is a conspiracy and we need to send some people to jail. And that's no more far-fetched than what they did to these sad sacks in Michigan.
You know, I just had an article, like maybe within the last couple of days, on the Morning Report, where there was a new conspiracy law that was passed, I believe, and somewhere buried deep in that law, and it wasn't even buried that deep. It was, you know, if I can, I'd need to look it up, but basically, it was saying that any kind of language can be construed as a conspiracy. And that will bring literally the wrath of the government down on your head. So this is, and now look what happened with the, in Loudoun County, with the parents who were protesting the critical race theory and the sexualization of their children. They were targeted from the top down. There was, by the president down to Merrick Garland, down to wherever, to set these people up and to label them as terrorists and white supremacists and insurrectionists out to overthrow the government merely because they protest what's being taught to their children. So this is dangerous.
And their kids being raped in a restroom by some chick with a dick.
Exactly, exactly. So this is where we're at. This is when the criminalization of language or the criminalization of political thought and political speech or any speech that some approved source finds objectionable, and you have the road to the gulag right there, my friends.
It's sort of a tortured segue, but you can look at the current ghost gun madness as part of the same thought process. You create this maze, this ridiculous impenetrable law or series of laws that gives the prosecutors incredible discretion. They can do essentially whatever they want, and this, as I said, this ghost gun mess is going to do the same thing with law-abiding gun owners. They're going to go from making the receiver of every weapon the primary portion of the weapon and the part that needs the serial number and is actually defined legally as the weapon. And they're going to create this list of parts that could possibly, in the far future, you know, with magic and unicorn urine, if you sprinkle it over it, it'll turn into a gun. Well, then you're going to go to jail. And there's going to come a time where people who build AR-15s for fun and profit, or just fun, I do that for fun, will be criminals. And through no fault of their own, I'm a law-abiding citizen. I have parts in my little workshop that I can put together to make a gun. Well, which part is the gun? Is it the receiver? Is it the barrel? Is it the trigger? Is it the magazine?
It's the intent. It's the intent. That little gizmo part gadget is designed to go into a gun, which guns are bad, and therefore you are bad, CBD. And that's what it's going to boil down to.
Unfortunately, you're 100% correct. Once again, show me the man, and I'll show you the crime.
The crime.
But again, who is to determine what is and what is not a conspiracy, and what are people conspiring against? And you could say that, I mean, anything that, it can be said that, you know, Joe Biden getting rid of Title 42 and opening up the borders, once, you know, literally throwing it open once and for all. Anybody who objects to that could be said to be, well, you are making dangerous political speech, and it's tantamount to insurrection. So this is how far we've come. So there is no more, you know, it's a microcosm of just everything in general, where there is no more a debate. We just had a story where there was a student who invited Alan West to speak at a college campus, and they were literally chased off the stage, and she was chased by these Antifa thugs and almost threatened with her life, or really was threatened with her life, just because she dared bring Alan West onto the campus to speak. Of course, these people won't be punished, or if they are punished, it's a slap on the wrist, and there you go.
Free speech has become a punchline, essentially, in the United States, and that's sad. And of course, you know, the classical conservative position is that comfortable speech is trivial. Nobody cares about comfortable speech. And it is only the speech that is contentious, that is offensive, that deserves to be protected. But that has morphed into what JJ has eloquently described. And 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I would have laughed at his suggestion that they would use political speech as evidence of a conspiracy, as evidence of sedition, as evidence of insurrection. And yet, you know, April 2022, and that's exactly what is going on in the United States today.
Yeah, there is no, for me, there is no such thing as a tinfoil hat conspiracy. I mean, anything is possible. Everything we have seen over the last, you know, at least definitely since 2020 and even before that is fair game. I mean, Donald Trump, I mean, we talked about this. Donald Trump, for all his achievements as best that he did in the, at least the first 3 years of his presidency, is just by the opposition against him exposed the absolute naked tyranny that really is at the heart, unfortunately, sadly, of the United States political process. We do not have a two-party system. We have basically one faction that seeks to lord over the populace, and they play different roles at different times. And so by him exposing that, that was really his greatest achievement, in my opinion.
Right.
Outside of
well,
it, you know, all the other good things.
You know, our government's just too big to succeed as it was originally designed. You know, we talked about the FBI and what they did, but this goes back to Barack Obama when he started militarizing all these different federal bureaucracies. Why does the National Weather Service need a fucking SWAT team? You know,
to fight climate change. That's why they need to swap.
It's just, you know, we could have 8 years of Trump, 8 years of DeSantis, name the next super duper conservative small government individual, and they're not going to succeed. And why? Because the politicians of yesteryear turned over their responsibility to these unelected bureaucrats. And who are the people that are drawn to bureaucracies? It's these leftists, it's these do-gooders, it's these pie-in-the-sky, you know, sounds really good in the faculty lounge, you know, drinking, you know, non-slave labor, GMO coffee or whatever. And it just, this is the way it's going to be. It's just like, you know, Title IX. Title IX was supposed to defend women, you know, in the sports and in the universities. Well, it's just been turned upside down with that dick wiener head over in Pennsylvania, Leah. And he's a guy, he couldn't make it as a guy, and now he's a chick. But the bureaucracy's saying it's fine, and we're going to give you, you know, puberty blockers, and we're going to cut off your tits, and it's just, it's wrong. And this, you know, I'm sorry to be the doom, gloomy guy that I am today, but, you know, the representative republic that we have is pretty much shot, and it's just not a matter of if, it's when it's going to be gone. And, you know, you were talking about the college girl being chased off stage and in danger from these Antifa people. You know, it's about when this starts happening, maybe some people just start shooting and just say, I was defending myself, and just let it be that. You know, if you're going to be, you know, if you want to play dangerous games, then we'll play dangerous games back with you.
Well, you know, Miss Hume, you said an interesting comment. You said the government is too big to succeed. Well, the problem is that the government is too big to, you know, I don't want to use the word overthrow, but too big to what Jefferson said, and that's what he meant, is to actually remove it and to get rid of it. So this is a real quandary we have.
Well, Ms. Hume also said something interesting, and that is the people who gravitate toward big government entering the bureaucracy. I think that you're right. You know, these pie-in-the-sky do-gooders, I think is what you said, do enter bureaucracy. Also, because you're a polite Midwesterner, you didn't say what you probably were thinking, was that they're a bunch of sleazy little lazy scumbags who love the idea of a guaranteed job for life where they can't get fired even if they sit on their asses all day. But I think as one goes up the levels, one finds people who are not so enamored of the idea of doing good. They are quite enamored of the idea of doing well and controlling other people while making a lot of money. And I think Anthony Fauci is an excellent example of that. He began his career as a intelligent and apparently well-regarded immunologist, I think he was an immunologist. But he quickly morphed into a power-hungry bureaucrat who played the game very, very well. And we have far too many of those people. And yes, government is too big to succeed, and the obvious problem is that it is that even if it were smaller, it would be failing, but it wouldn't do as much damage.
Right.
And good.
No, you're right. It's just it's just so big that the damage is just so encompassing.
Yeah.
It's just it'd be one thing if it was, oh, it's just in this factor of life. But, I mean, it's everything from the recent CAFE standards that they're implementing with cars, you know, in the 40-mile-an-hour or 40-mile-per-gallon range to, you know, is carbon dioxide, is that a pollutant? I mean, they got their fingers everywhere, and it's just, I don't know. And then back to, you know, I know several people that would be really good in my municipality where they would probably be really wonderful town chairman or town trustees or whatever. They're like, I don't want to deal with fucking government. I don't want to be in it. I don't want to deal with it. You know, we sit, you know, we sit and complain over in all the fence, you know, having a beverage, and like, well, that guy's just a, you know, whatever. And it's like, well, you should run. No, I don't want to run. But if a liberal wacko do-getter, he'd probably say, yeah, and then I'm going to change this and I'm going to change that. So, you know, it's double-edged sword.
Well, here's the thing. It's like, maybe, yes, of course. Hey, look, it's wonderful if you have the money and if you have the backing and if you can get the name recognition to run for a fairly high-profile office, it's one thing. But obviously the forces that will corrupt you or will try to destroy you if you're incorruptible are ever-present. But the big thing and the big change is going to come at the very, very, very lowest level, where all politics is local, at the community board level and at the school board level. And I think that is going to be the key to at least having some chance of at least, if not reversing course immediately, then stopping this madness from further, further taking us down the road to hell. If indeed that is our, you know, that's our destiny. But that's where it begins and ends. It's in the pits and as close to your kids, as close to your neighbors as possible. And here's the problem: if we don't do it, and hey, look, I'm guilty as everybody else of being sitting on my hands and saying, "What's the use?" But if we don't do it, and if your neighbors don't do it, then but sure as hell, some crazy leftist somewhere is going to be doing it because they know that that's the route to controlling everything. So we got to do it.
You're absolutely right, and unfortunately, Ms. Hume made the salient point, and that is that conservatives tend to shy away from exactly that kind of involvement with government because they find it distasteful. We talked about this a month or two ago. It's simply distasteful to be part of government, and conservatives don't want it.
Well, the good news and bad news of that is that, well, I'd say the bad news is now they're going after your children, mind, body, and soul.
Yeah.
And now enough people are saying, this is not good. So they're getting angry and they're speaking out and they're saying, no, you're not going to do this anymore. And we are going to stop you from doing this. And they've now become, become enemies of the state.
Well,
so
listen,
if that's
look
the case,
what's going on
that's the line that's in.
Look at what's going on in Florida with Walt Disney. Their chairman or the president had made some tepid remarks about, what do they call it? The Don't Say Gay bill, which is total shit.
It's not total shit. It's nothing to do with it. It has nothing to do with that.
It's just gay. It's not teaching transgenderism to six-year-olds. And it's
exactly,
you know, it's axiomatic. That's a ridiculously bad idea. But anyway, so after getting a huge amount of pressure from a tiny, tiny portion of his workforce, he caved and began to attack the bill supported by the majority of the people of Florida. So it's none of his damn business. He began to attack it. And to DeSantis's credit, Governor DeSantis's credit, by the way, DeSantis 24, he ripped him a new asshole. And he pointed out that the
I think your phrasing there might be in question.
Yeah,
considering the topic.
Right.
Considering the topic.
That out of the...
he transitioned a new anal opening.
Yeah. So DeSantis ripped him and made some very, very important points. It's not really the job of corporations in Florida to dictate policy. And he also suggested that perhaps the wonderful little perk that the Walt Disney Corporation has in or the Disney Corporation has in Florida, which is essentially not being governed by any of the laws of the state of Florida on their properties, should go away. And hopefully it will go away. And that will punish the Disney Corporation for sticking its neck out.
two things.
We're going to have a lot of censored stuff in this.
We're going to keep it.
I'm going to say, you know, Disney shouldn't have stuck its dick into the business of the people of the state of Florida. And hopefully it'll get whacked off and they can be that transgender they've always wanted to be.
Lovely. You know, Matt Gaetz has been pushing his mark.
Edit this, JJ. This is awesome podcast material.
Bleep. Of course, this will not be edited. But I was going to say, is Matt Gaetz has been all over this too, and he's been a champion on this. And you know, it also brings up the notion when we talk about Disney is that Disney and corporate America have become so corrupted in the boardroom that they are becoming the de facto enforcers of social and political policies that politicians could not or perhaps were too scared to try to push through either through the bureaucracy or through the legislature. So all this, you know, this diversity insanity and everything else that they're trying to foist on us is being done, you know, through the quote-unquote free market. And it's like, as Ace and others would say, but my corporations, you know, and this is what's happening.
We talked about this a little while ago, and that is, you know, corporations are very big. You know, you have a 401k, I have a 401k, CBD has a 401k.
Oops,
sorry about that. You know, but how much do I, you know, how much do we owe the three of us? How much do we owe collectively in, say, the Disney ABC conglomerate? We don't have enough to probably shake our stick. We're not Elon Musk and buying 9% of the Twitter sewer. So I don't know how we can control the boardrooms. Although JJ's right when he said that the boardrooms are trying to control America, you know, thought process and behavior with their shit. But it goes back to, you know, big government. Now we got big corporations. I don't know what we can do. I mean, we can, you know, we keep fighting it and try to get out in front of it, and that's about all we can do.
We're going to get back to this in a moment because I have a couple of thoughts on this. Let's take a brief break. Cut Chip Newsletter Speaks, the podcast, back in a flash. We are back, JJ Seffin, CBD Misanthropic Humanitarian with the CJN podcast. And before the break, we were talking about how corporate America is being used in a way as the enforcer and the driver of social and public policy. It's interesting, Mizum mentioned Elon Musk buying a 9% stake in Twitter, which is brilliant. And what everyone thinks about Elon Musk and his motives and sort of what his past positions on things, this is a great move. And he has turned down a position on the Twitter board of directors because it would have impeded his or prevented his ability from buying more stock. And I think it's by that move, it's kind of obvious. It looks like he kind of wants to do an aggressive and hostile takeover of Twitter, which would be amazing.
Well, that would be wonderful. And let's not pretend Elon Musk is probably an arch liberal, but he has those quaint ideas about free speech and about the free market. So he bought 9%. So the market cap of Twitter is about $37 billion. It's actually a relatively small corporation by today's standards. So he would need to buy $19 billion worth of stock to have total control over Twitter. He's got the money. And I don't know if he's got friends who can, you know, toss in a billion there, a billion here, and a billion there to get there. Okay.
Turn your radio down.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm Richard Belzer doing the greatest looking guy you'll ever hear here. All right.
Well, you know.
Yeah. So let's go to CBD from New Jersey.
What are you wearing, baby? Yeah, the whole idea of as I was saying, corporate America as and this that's a good move on Elon Musk's part. So I hope he you know turns the table of that money changer over. But we you know with at the risk of swerving into the quagmire, which political and otherwise of that is the Ukraine invasion of Russia. the people that have been cheering most for the Ukrainians have been people like Klaus Schwab, you know, Larry Fink of BlackRock, and our friend George Soros, and so on and so forth. And believe me, I'm no great apologist for Vladimir Putin, but when all these globalists who want to control social policy and governmental policy by seeing who gets to get what loans and who doesn't get what loans, and by putting fossil fuels out of business and this one in business and so on and so forth, and deciding who are going to be the winners and losers just by some notion of social justice or whatever it is that they decide. Yeah, that's a danger. That is a real danger. And so, you know, anything we can do or anything that anybody does to upend that or prevent that from happening, you know, is certainly welcome news in my estimation.
I think that makes perfect sense strategically, but tactically, we have an issue right now, and that is Russia invaded a sovereign country.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
As much as I find Ukraine distasteful, and I find much of Ukraine distasteful, it's a horribly corrupt country. They've injected themselves into American politics. They are a conduit for a huge amount of graft originating in the United States. I'm not a fan of Ukraine, but I think that it is incumbent upon the world to do something about this invasion. I don't want America to do anything about this invasion other than, you know, make pretty sounds at the United Nations and you know, jabber about the sovereignty of Ukraine. Let Europe take care of Europe's problem. But as I said, Putin is a bad man, and he would have been fine, in my estimation, had he not invaded Ukraine. But he has crossed that line. And that is not, again, that's not a defense of Ukraine. It is simply a recognition that Vladimir Putin did something very bad.
He did do something very bad, and I agree wholeheartedly with you that it is a European problem, and let the Europeans solve it. But it also kind of goes back to old Pudding Head in the White House that said, well, a little bit of an incursion is fine. You know, we laughed over at the Ace of Spades about, you know, Barack Obama having the Midas shit touch. Well, this guy, whatever he touches, it's just five times as worse. So, you know, I don't know. Then back to Elon Musk and Twitter, and it's just like you said, he's a liberal or probably a liberal, and he's probably one of those old-fashioned liberals that, you know, maybe somewhat believes in free speech, believes in capitalism to some extent. I got a kick out of old Liz Warren, you know, saying that he didn't build it. Well, you know what? If the damn politicians wouldn't have put in all these loopholes and brakes for EVs and the like, then he wouldn't have done it. So, I mean, I'm not a big Musk fan, but I'm glad he bought 9% of Twitter. So, yeah. And Ukraine just.
Well, you know, speaking of the Ukraine, Hunter Biden and the laptop.
Yes, it's information, baby. 460 gigs of new data. Oh my God, they discovered new stuff on a laptop that hasn't been used in years. It's fascinating that the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower talked about is alive and well in the United States. You know, any halfway decent computer tech could have found all that stuff within a week or two. There's just a lot of it, so you have to go through it. And that's why it would take a week or two. And they hid it. Let's not pretend it's anything other than the FBI and the Justice Department deciding that they did not want this information released until after the election. And then they figured they could tamp it down and it would go away. Well, it didn't go away. It remains to be seen whether anything can be done about Hunter Biden. And right now, I don't really give a shit about Hunter Biden. You know, he's a crackhead. He's going to kill himself in a car. He's going to OD. Something's going to happen to him. He's unimportant. What he is, however, is the conduit of these billions directly to the president of the United States. And I think it's pretty damn clear that we have a corrupt man sitting in the Oval Office, or the facsimile of the Oval Office in some warehouse in D.C. And they simply cannot hide it that much.
What makes it insidious is that it would be one thing if Joe Biden, over his 50-year career of graft, lying, and just being a horrendous human being in Washington, D.C., it would be bad enough if that corruption was about a bridge to nowhere, a high-speed rail to nowhere, a this or a that to nowhere, a presidential library, built Robert Byrd kind of, you know, building monuments to himself within his home state of Delaware or Scranton or wherever the hell he comes from. But literally this whole thing, as he became a national political figure and a national leader, perished the thought, but he was and is, it was about literally selling American foreign policy to the highest bidder, and that includes some of our worst rivals in the world and really global bad actors. And that makes it even, you know, 10 times worse than just the mere, you know, bridge to nowhere somewhere. And it's horrendous. Now, how this Hunter thing redounds on him is anyone's guess. Is Joe Biden going to be removed from office for this? I don't think so. Is Hunter Biden going to face any kind of criminal repercussions for this? Who knows? Who knows? But the fact that it was exposed, I think, is even 18 months later. Yes, it is a damning indictment of our media, which doesn't exist. But at least it's out there, and it should be. You know, I'm glad that at least somehow it was put out there.
Well, it's out there, but how far is it out there? I mean, you know, us news junkies, we know it's out there, but the average Joe and Jane, you know, the guys and gals that work, you know, 3 to 11 or 8 to 5, and they come home and, you know, they talk over their day with their spousal unit and their kids or what have you, or they're single and they go out and go bowling or go, you know, dancing or whatever. You know, do they, how much has CBS, ABC, you know, PMS, NBC, all that bullshit, how much is it out there? It's not even really leading the way with all my, you know, with all my feeds that I do my overnight thread with. So I don't, nothing's going to happen. And, you know, us cynical, skeptical people will just remain cynical and skeptical and just despise DC that much. But, you know, you got Pelosi that's bringing in, you know, millions and billions of dollars, and she's hanging around with corrupt Chinese people. You know, you've got Hunter Biden, you know, with Russians and Chinese, and, you know.
You know, JJ, you mentioned something about the quality of the graft. I don't know if you remember, but Plunkett of Tammany Hall, remember that? He was one of the Tammany Hall bosses. I think he actually wrote a book about it, and he talked about honest graft, which is, you know, it's obviously it's a joke, but he was actually serious about it. I think that there is always going to be honest graft in government, but recently our political masters have crossed that line in which that graft is antithetical to the desires and the health of the United States. It's one thing to, as you said, you know, cash in on a bridge to nowhere, but it's something very, very different when you further policies in support of our enemies. And let's face it, Russia and China are our enemies, in particular China. I don't think Russia is much more than a paper tiger.
Well, look, I mean, you know, Hillary Clinton sold 20% of our uranium stocks to either Russia or Ukraine or some combination thereof through the Uranium One deal. And then whatever it was 25, 26 years ago, she and Bill Clinton, literally through this Loral Space Industries, gave the Red Chinese the ability to put multiple warheads on their ICBMs. That to me is like, that's a hanging offense. I mean, that literally is treason. Yeah. High treason, and look at where she is. But again, what happened? I think Ron Brown died in a plane crash.
So, yeah, Loral Industries. I used to drive down Interstate 87 through Yonkers, and on the on one side of the road was the Loral Industries building. I used to be fascinated by that when I was a kid. Anyway,
I think we have reached end. Yes, we are done, sir. Sorry. First of all, you sound like you're in a subway toilet somewhere, unfortunately.
Hey, are you 5'5", 185 pounds?
That's Barbara Mikulski. That's not Ms. Hoon.
I don't look like Jerry Nadler, if that's what you're asking.
He's gone. Anyway, this has been the Cut Jib News Letter Speaks podcast, episode 17. JJ Sefton, CBD and misanthropic humanitarian. We will see you on the next one. Take care, everybody.
Thanks for listening, folks.
Bye.